2 Corinthians chapter 11. We're going to study verses 1 to 15 this morning. I wish you would bear with me in a little foolishness. Do bear with me. I feel a divine jealousy for you, for I betrothed you to one husband to present you as a pure virgin to Christ. But I'm afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his cunning, your thoughts will be led astray from a sincere and pure devotion to Christ. For if someone comes and proclaims another Jesus than the one we proclaimed, or if you receive a different spirit from the one you received, or if you accept a different gospel from the one you accepted, you put up with it readily enough. I consider that I am not in the least inferior to these super apostles. Even if I am unskilled in speaking, I am not so in knowledge. Indeed, in every way we have made this plain to you in all things. Or did I commit a sin in humbling myself so that you might be exalted, because I preached God's gospel to you free of charge? I robbed other churches by accepting support from them in order to serve you. And when I was with you and was in need, I did not burden anyone, for the brothers who came from Macedonia supplied my need. So I refrained and will refrain from burdening you in any way. As the truth of Christ is in me, this boasting of mine will not be silenced in the regions of Achaia. And why? Because I do not love you? God knows I do. And what I do, I will continue to do in order to undermine the claim of those who would like to claim that in their boasted mission they work on the same terms as we do. For such men are false apostles, deceitful workmen, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for even Satan himself disguises himself as an angel of light. So it is no surprise if his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness. Their end will correspond to their deeds. So Paul gets going now against the opponents. This whole letter has been building to this point. There is, quite a strong bit of language here from Paul when he starts getting into it with people. But he begins this section talking about his jealousy for the church. He has a jealousy for the church. So verses 1 to 6, be jealous for the church. The first thing Paul wants to do, though, is he says, bear with my foolishness. And he's recognizing the boasting he is about to partake in is foolishness. And he shouldn't be doing it, but he has to under the circumstances. He says, this boasting may appear as foolishness to the Corinthians. So he prefaces that. He prepares them for it. Now let's look at the content of his foolishness. It doesn't exalt him. He's not trying to lift himself up. The boasting he's going to do is not to make himself look better. That is not why he boasts. What he is going to do is only for the protection and salvation of the Corinthians. He has them in mind. That is why he's doing what he's doing. Although Paul will stoop to some personal boasting, his motive for the boasting is not like the false teachers. They boast to make themselves look good. Paul boasts to protect the Corinthians. Paul gives three reasons here, then, why they should bear with this foolishness. Reason number one, for the Corinthians to bear with Paul, divine jealousy. This is verse 2 and 3. Divine jealousy. They were in danger, and he was concerned for them. He was very concerned about them. The concern comes because he loves them. He has the love of Christ for them. So when he sees them in danger, he is very concerned. And that concern he calls a jealousy. He has the same goals for them as Christ, the same desires. He says in this part that he betrothed them to one husband, Christ. It's almost Paul putting himself in the role of the father, and Corinth is the daughter. He puts himself in that role. He's betrothed them to Christ. His job, then, is to ensure that they are ready for Christ, that they are kept pure for Christ. That is what he wants them to be, and that is what he sees his job as to be done. So the jealousy is about their loyalty to Christ, that they remain ready for him. Their conversion is that betrothal state, and their presentation to him is the glorification when they see Christ and move on to heaven. Jealousy, now you have to recognize, only operates where there is love. I mean, there's no jealousy if there's no love of any kind. It's the kind of thing that goes along with it. So he's telling them, by saying he's jealous, he's saying that he has affection for them, that he has love there. That's a very important part of it. The greater the love that you have for someone, the greater the jealousy, right? This is seen in emotional relationship or in the concern for someone's well-being, and that's what Paul has here. He's concerned for them. He loves them very much. He's jealous for their sake. Paul's jealousy for the Corinthians is there because of this divine love. It's a godly love, a godly jealousy. Had he not loved them, he wouldn't have cared what happened to them, right? But he did love them. And the jealousy here is not a concern that he has for himself. Sometimes people get jealous, and it's a selfish jealousy, and that somebody else is going to come in and take over his territory. And that's not what he was thinking about at all either. His concern for them isn't just so that he can possess them, have them only to himself. It wasn't a jealousy for his own reputation either. It was a godly concern that they were going to turn away from the gospel to error. That was what his concern was. And then in this, he brings in the example of Grandma Eve, right? Great, great, great Grandma Eve, deceived by the serpent's cunning. Paul saw that their thoughts had been led astray from a sincere and pure devotion to Christ. Just as Eve had fallen for lies that brought spiritual destruction, so were the Corinthians. These servants of the devil were coming to lure the Corinthians away, to deceive them. And the attack, so we're coming along the lines that we mentioned last week. Remember the spiritual warfare items that we mentioned last week? This is the kind of things that have to do with purity of doctrine, allegiance to the true gospel. The departure, therefore, is called spiritual adultery. That's what makes you unfit for Christ, by turning away from Christ to these false ideas. Reason number two for the Corinthians to bear with Paul: they were willing to put up with false teaching from other people. He could see that in them. He had every reason to be concerned for them, because he wasn't imagining this. They were putting up with garbage, and he needed to address this issue. If they're willing to listen to false teachers, then surely they should give him some time, since he's the one who brought them to faith in the first place. These people were not apostles, and Paul says that in another way in this verse. Look at verse 4. It's kind of funny. For if someone comes... And that's the part right there. If someone comes, it's kind of interesting. Because we know that an apostle is someone who is sent. And so he gets this kind of behind-the-way digging at these guys, saying, if someone comes. They haven't been sent. They're not apostles. They're the people who come on their own authority, come with their own ideas. They aren't from Christ. They haven't been sent by God to come to Corinth. They've come on their own accord. And he gets that in there, and it's very significant that he says this to them. He describes these men as people who come along with their own initiative, their own ideas that aren't related to Christ. So we learn three things to be careful of in teachers and their proclaiming. Look what they said. If they come to proclaim another Jesus than we proclaimed, a different spirit from the one you received, or a different gospel than the one that you accepted. These would be the three things to be very careful about when you're listening to somebody attempt to teach you spiritual things. Proclaiming a different Jesus. And there's very particular things about Jesus Christ that you must believe in order to be saved. And that if you believe in a different Jesus than the one described in the New Testament, in the Gospels, then you don't believe in the true Jesus Christ, the one that you must believe in to be saved. He is divine, he is God, he is also man. Both these aspects of who he is are very crucial and important. He is crucified and he's risen again. That his death and his resurrection was for your salvation. There's also this aspect of offering a different spirit. We don't know if Paul's referring to the Holy Spirit here or if he's talking about a different kind of spirit. Something along the lines of what he mentions in the book of Romans and Galatians, a spirit of fear or slavery versus the spirit of freedom that comes in Christ. See, if these false teachers were bringing in some aspects of Judaism that they wanted the Corinthians to practice, you can be a Christian, but you also have to do these kind of things, then these would be very important things. They would be looking at maybe Jesus was special, but maybe not God. Maybe you need to follow some aspects of the law in order to be saved. These are very important. But Jesus brings us the spirit of freedom. Certainly the next one on the list is crucial too, the presentation of what the gospel is. The gospel of the kingdom is Jesus' message, always was, and anybody who proclaims a different message than that is not teaching you the gospel. Be very careful of them. And so I've stressed what over and over and over again, what is the gospel? Do you know what it is? Do you really know what it is? And do you know what is extra to the gospel, that those elements that are
subject to interpretation and tradition. They don't make you saved or not saved. They're just other ideas. But the crucial part, the gospel itself, that is important. And if somebody gets the gospel part wrong, do not listen to them. They're dangerous. They will deceive you. The gospel part's very important, right? Gospel has two parts to it. What's the first part? The part that you believe, okay? The part that you believe is what? What about? The value system of God, which is? Christ dying on the cross. Sacrificial love for the benefit of others. Christ's death on the cross. That is what we believe. Part of the things that we believe are who Christ is. That he is God, that he is man, his death on the cross, his resurrection. These are the elements of his sacrifice for us. The part that we do, the second part of the gospel, is what? That we have that sacrificial love for the benefit of others ourselves. If we don't have it, then we don't believe it. Then we aren't in his kingdom. These are very important. This is the gospel. So if anybody tells you something other than what you know to be the gospel, Jesus' death and resurrection for your salvation, that it's God's sacrificial love for you that brings you into his kingdom. If anybody teaches you something else than that, they're deceiving you. If somebody teaches you can believe that first part but not be changed into his value system, they're deceiving you as well. If you don't adopt the value system of God, you are not in his kingdom. You will not be saved. Jesus makes that extremely clear in the Gospels. Reason number three for the Corinthians to bear with Paul, he was not inferior to the super apostles. I love that, super apostles. We don't know exactly who he's speaking about here. If he's talking about these false teachers, and they go by this title, we're the super apostles. Or if he's talking about the false teachers, they've come from Judea, Jerusalem. So, well, we don't listen to Paul, we listen to the super apostles. Peter, James, John, they're the super apostles. Paul's just an apostle. So we don't know which view particular they have in there, that these false teachers were calling themselves the super apostles. There's people that go around all the time in the church. They take these credentials to themselves. I'm apostle so-and-so. And, okay, fine. You want to call yourself apostle or prophet or whatever. Go ahead. That doesn't mean I'm going to listen to you. Because I'm going to look at what? I'm going to look at the message that you have. Not this credential, not this title that you've taken upon for yourself. So these are very important things to be aware of. People in the church that claim titles to themselves. If he's talking about the 12 apostles, or at least Peter, James, and John, or somebody like that, somebody who's far superior to Paul, Paul's saying, no way. No. I'm not any less than Peter, Paul, James, John, anybody. I'm a full apostle just as much as anyone else. He's not going to take that. In verse 6, he says that we measure by knowledge, not by clever speech. Even if I'm unskilled in speaking, I'm not so in knowledge. Indeed, in every way we've made this plain to you in all things. Beware of teachers who may be good speakers but have dangerous content. Paul may have not have had all the special training and rhetoric that the Corinthians, that the Greeks would have enjoyed. Oh, you had to speak in this special way and have these verbal skills. There was all this training that you could have. The Corinthians adored that. He said, I might not have all that special training like that, but I have something better. I know what I'm talking about. I have knowledge. I have the most important part of the message. What he may have lacked in delivery, he made up for in content. The danger of fine speech is that often it's a conduit for error. People can be so overwhelmed by the style of the speaker, the method of the speaker, that they fall for the lies that are coming out of his mouth. And it's very dangerous. I've heard very eloquent people speak, and they weren't speaking what's in the Bible. Very dangerous. Very dangerous. So here Paul is demonstrating the difference between someone who speaks things that you might find interesting, you might find thought-provoking, you might even enjoy it, and preaching the truth. That's the difference. The truth that changes lives, that brings you into the kingdom. One seeks to gain a following, the other seeks to transform people by the power of the gospel. This next section in verses 7 to 12, Paul takes another issue up with these guys, and the issue is money. We talked about this a lot in chapters 8 and 9, now we come back to it here. This was also something we looked at in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses about 3 to 18, something like that. So we looked at that section before. This is where Paul says, I won't take money from you guys. He says it to the Corinthians. I'm not going to receive payment for preaching the gospel to you. And it has to do with this complaint against them that these false teachers were coming. Like, Paul's not taking money for his teaching. You know what that means? His teaching's not worth any money. That was the conclusion that they were trying to draw out. If you won't take money for what you're doing, it must not be worth anything. And that is how people thought, the Greek people thought. People traveled around making their living speaking. The better that you spoke, the better your content, the better whatever your message was, the more money you made. If it was garbage, you wouldn't make money. You'd also have to probably do some begging on the side. So if Paul's not taking money from the Corinthians, therefore, he must not have anything worth talking about. Now, the astute person will recall that Paul has already said to the Corinthians he does want some of their money. He wants their support. Remember that? We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. Paul says, once I can finally get your feet under you guys stable enough so I can, you know, not worry about you guys being deceived and led astray, I'm planning on going somewhere else, and then I want you to send me money and support me when I go somewhere else. I won't take money from you when I'm training you. I'll take money from you when I go do mission work. That was what he wanted to do. It's very important, and there's a distinction there. His policy was to receive money from the established churches and accept that money as support when he planted new churches. But he didn't take money from the churches he was currently working in. He wanted people to understand that when he took the gospel to them, it was free. It was the gift of God. They didn't need to buy it. They didn't need to earn it. They didn't need to get anything from Paul or from God to receive it. It was a free gift. It was offered without charge of any kind. The false teachers turned this aspect of Paul's idea around and said he can't be a true apostle or he would receive money. Now, he had a right to it. He absolutely had a right to receive financial support. He talks about that in 1 Corinthians 9. But he also, as he says there, he has the right to refuse that right. And that's what he said in that text. I'll choose to refuse that right. And he says, and if I choose to refuse the right to take money, is that a sin? Should that offend you? What we also see here is something very interesting. Who are the people that supported Paul when he was ministering in Corinth? The Macedonians, the poor Macedonians, remember? These are the people that scraped together the gift to go off sacrificially to go off to Jerusalem. He's already used them once as an example in this letter to the Corinthians. And now he does it again. He says, when I ministered among you, you guys have bucks. You're the Corinthians. And I didn't take a dime of it. Well, who did I take money from? He says, I plundered the Macedonians so I could bring the gospel to you. Learn from their example, Corinthians. They received the gospel freely, but when he was ready to move on to another place, he expected the Corinthians to support him, just as the Macedonians had done. Something to come later, though. Then Paul says that he humbled himself that the Corinthians might be exalted. He was willing to make tents, work with his hands, not receive money from them until the time that the support from the Macedonians came. He said he didn't have to do that, but he did it for their benefit. It was a humbling of himself that they might be exalted. It would protect them from thinking that anyone who came along could be trusted. He wanted to set the bar high for somebody who would come and minister to them. They may have missed that point, obviously. they were exalted by being lifted out of their sin and unbelief. They were given forgiveness and truth and power. And Paul says, you received so much from me, and now you question me? See, the questioning is of Paul's motives. Perhaps he doesn't take our money because he doesn't love us. So, he doesn't love us, so he won't take the money from us. And Paul says, God knows that I love you. Now, remember the jealousy part earlier? I mean, you can't have jealousy if there's not love there. So, Paul, why do it then? Paul says the reason he does it is because no one else is going to come work for free. He says there's not going to be one false teacher that's going to come work for free among you. No one else is going to work under the same terms we do. When the false teachers were offered money and they accepted money, they said it validated their apostleship. Paul says, those false teachers will never measure up to me. They hoped that their criticisms of Paul would lead Paul to take money from the Corinthians, because the moment Paul took money from the Corinthians, then it would validate the false teachers as well. See, Paul takes money, we take money, no difference between us. But as long as Paul held out and said, I'll never take money, they could never, they have to lie and twist things, they could never measure up to Paul. Paul says, I'll never take it. Never. And those false teachers will never measure up to me. It's another thing you can often see in false teachers and their ministries. Money, 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 money. Send me money, right? Happens a lot. It's a lot. It's a big deal. It's a big issue. Verses 13 to 15. It's kind of like when the gloves come off. And in this corner, Paul. And in the other corner, the apostles of Satan, right? For such men are false apostles, deceitful workmen, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. So it's no surprise if his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness. Pretty strong language here. Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. He sounds good, looks good. And so the false teachers that come along, they emulate that. They were dangerous. They were destructive. They operated by lies and deceit. To fully appreciate the section, you have to go back to that example of Eve in the garden. Eve and the serpent in the tree, right? The serpent there waiting to say, you want to eat this fruit, right? You have to go back to that. Because everything the serpent said to Eve sounded good to her. Everything sounded good to her. She didn't have the discernment to be able to determine right and wrong, good and evil. And so she listened to this other person instead of listening to God. See, sometimes when you don't have the discernment to know right, wrong, good and evil, don't try to figure it out on your own. Find out what God has to say about it. Just obey Him. Anyway, everything the serpent told her sounded good. She could have knowledge. She could have wisdom. She could know good and evil. She could be like God. She could choose for herself right and wrong. And what did it bring her? Spiritual ruin. Spiritual destruction. It sounded good, but it had disastrous results. And that is exactly what's going on in Corinth. Exactly the same thing. Sounds good, disastrous results. Finally, let's consider the work of Satan when he comes to tempt Christ. Because he never changes his method. It's always the same thing. Remember Jesus, Matthew chapter 4, Luke chapter 4? Satan was always tempting Jesus to do what? To not go to the cross. Because the cross was the path to a spiritual kingdom, not an earthly kingdom. So whenever Satan comes to tempt Jesus, he always tempts him with having an earthly kingdom. That is the nature of the temptation, to have an earthly kingdom. And so many Christians fall right down that same temptation path, and they go right into it. Let's look at it. What are the things, when Jesus is tempted by Satan, what are the three things in Matthew that he's tempted to do? Satisfy his appetites, right? To fill his belly. And it's better to be good than to have a full belly. It's better to be good than to satisfy your appetites. What was the second one? Jump off the top of the temple and have everybody go, wow, right? That's what the second temptation was. In other words, to put on a show. To have people like you. It's better to be good than to have people like you. What's the third one? You can have all the kingdoms of the world if you bow down and worship me. The temptation was to have an earthly kingdom. That's what the temptation was. Jesus resists all these temptations. Put on a show to fill his own belly and to build his own kingdom. An earthly kingdom. Christ resisted these things. Why? To offer himself as a sacrifice. To put on a show, to fill your own belly, and to have an earthly kingdom are the opposite of sacrifice. They're the opposite. The false teachers come to do what? Put on a show, fill their own belly, and to gain a following. That's what they do. That's what they come to do. That's part of how you can recognize a false teacher. They come to put on a show, to fill their own belly, and to gain a following. It's no wonder Paul could so easily identify them as false teachers, as messengers of Satan. They looked like him. Again, Paul's focus with the Corinthians is on the gospel and its effect. To have the truth brings freedom and Christ-likeness. To turn from the gospel brings slavery and spiritual ruin. The factors that Paul calls the Corinthians to focus on are those things. What are these people saying about Jesus Christ, the gospel, and his kingdom? What's the result of that in your life? So you can measure it in the Corinthians. We talked about this before. As soon as they started listening to the false teachers, they stopped wanting to give to other people. It doesn't matter how good it sounds. If it's not true, it brings spiritual slavery. The Corinthians were measuring these men by the wrong criteria, and that led them away from Paul's teaching and away from Christ. The bottom line, Paul says again and again, is make sure you get the gospel right. If you know it, it will protect you.